Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. My name's David Reed. This is Marek Larwood.
Hello, my name's Marek Larwood. And this week, for regular listeners, we have relocated to the environs of my house, Nice Muscle Hill. So fingers crossed there will be no police sirens, just the tweeting of happy birds and probably a builder who'll start building as soon as I mention them. Anyway,
I've never had to do any angle grinding in my life, but it sure seems a popular thing for some people to do. It's always when you're wanting to have a bit of peace and quiet, someone will get out the angle grinder.
There's more in terms of percentage of me being alive over the last 5 years. My existence has been 60% in the presence of building work,
yeah,
including sleeping time.
But that's London.
This is not points of view or a complaining programme.
No.
A film podcast. I went to the cinema. I went to the Crouch End Art House Cinema to watch Pride.
Good.
I must say something about the audience first of all.
Okay. Who goes to see Pride?
Well, it was, I think it's reflected in, so Pride is, a brief description of it, it is a British film about the lesbian and gay group who decided to support the National Mine Workers during the strike of 1984.
Oh, right.
Because they were a minority group, and they thought, oh, why not? And they had so many of the same problems that were affected by the miners. And they thought, why not? Because show a solidarity with these minority groups.
What, that Thatcher didn't like them?
That Thatcher didn't like them.
She was closing their pits
and
down.
That they were an outsider. She was closing. She wanted to seal up their holes.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Well, then they should all bandy together under a common cause.
After they normally were covered in dirt.
Yeah. Hang on.
I mean, that's homophobic, right?
Isn't it? That is. That really is.
That's the background to the film.
Okay. And this is true. This is based on true events, is it?
I don't think so.
Oh.
I know it was, actually, yes.
Oh, okay.
Because at the end, they do a bit when they say what's happened to all the people in real life. So, I tell a lie, it was, I think, quite loosely based on true events.
Okay.
I've not really looked into it, and you know, that's quite nice. You can look into films and do some research about them. If you want the accurate description of films, go into another podcast. If you want someone blundering through a film they've seen, this is the perfect place for you.
Yeah, if you want a podcast that basically replaces your ill-informed friends so you don't have to talk to them.
Yeah. I went to the cinema and it was full, I think Crouch End's a bit like that in the afternoon, it was full of 50-year-old women and me.
Yeah.
It's a small cinema, they've got two screens and there's about 80 seats in it. And although they were clearly affluent, rich people who go to cinema afternoons, they were very, very poorly behaved.
Really?
Yeah.
50-year-old ladies?
There was a group of six of them, and two sitting in front of me, and they thought because they were there, and they were the... It's some psychology thing about being the... Once you're the biggest group,
yes,
you can change your behaviour.
Mm.
So there was a group of about six women, and they split between the aisle, because there's a small cinema, something like four seats on each side, with a small screen,
yeah,
and there's about 10 rows, whatever. And they were just talking... Someone... And those annoying people who have to share something, they can't watch a film and go, actually, I'll talk about it at the end, but I'll turn to my... I've seen something. You're not watching TV.
Yeah.
You're watching a film in the cinema with other people, and there's a man who's paid just as much as you, a handsome, bald man. It's me.
Oh, you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sitting just behind, and I don't want to have to just hear that... after each comment they've said.
Yeah, it's really infuriating, isn't it?
It was so rude, and I thought you were just... And you know I'm sitting here, but you, because there are six of you, you think you were going to behave like this.
What happens in your mind when the frustration rises in you at that? What do you imagine doing? I mean, obviously, we don't do anything. We just
I think murderous thoughts.
Your murderous thoughts. I mean, how murderous do you
go? I get very close to acting on it. I get very close to saying things. I remember before.
What do you imagine you'll say? Because I'm interested by this guy. I think it's probably something that happens to a lot of people where they go, I could tell them to...
The problem is you want to say, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
But you do that, then that's disproportionate to what they've done.
Disproportionate response, and they would then be in their rights to react in kind. You know?
You become the evil guy.
Yeah.
Because you've been building up this resentment, not just from one action. This is from... They don't realise that we go to the cinema quite a lot and have to become overtly sensitive to the behaviour of people in there. So when someone does something annoying, you just go, I'm not going to... reactions...
This is my place. This is my sanctuary. And you are violating it.
You're violating me.
Yeah, you are violating my peace and quiet. So what you just want to say... Fuck off! Or shut the fuck up.
I mean, the way to do it is do it in a way that's not posh. When you tell someone to fuck off, you can't do it with any... Once they think you're weak or just doing it...
Yeah.
But the best way to do it is to do... I think, is to quietly. Do it... Like, no, you're mental.
Or
really quiet. Just go, shut.
Well, I get the thing of... because I don't want to disturb other people, you know, that who haven't heard this whispering person.
Mm.
So I get the sort of fantasies to lean into their ear. So even their friends don't know I've done it and just go, if you don't shut up, then terrible things are going to happen to you. And then just move back. Or something to that effect.
I think you should say, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
But you need to be in an air of mentalness that they're too scared to anything because they might... That you have to give them... That 3% chance that you might actually...
What about if you leant into their ear and just said, I love your talking.
That's really...
And then just went...
Yeah.
And then just leant back again. I don't think they'd talk again.
I think they could complain and say some bloke wanker.
You had more experience than this.
Yeah, I think they would do. Yeah. Anyway, so I went to see Pride.
Pride. So...
It's got really good reviews.
Who's in it?
It's got a cast of new young actors, some of whom are in the Right Club. The main...
Is Domhnall Gleeson in it?
No, he's not.
Oh, it seems like the kind of film he'd be in.
There's a guy called Ben Schnetzer who plays the lead.
Mr. Schnetzer,
yeah. He's going to be a star, this person.
Really?
He's also in the Right Club, which we're going to review next week. It's got all these British actors. You can see them. There's a couple of films now. You can see them coming through and go, oh, this is a new generation that are going to take all the acting work for the next 10, 15 years. And it's got a young cast as well. There's some bloke who's in Sunshine, I believe, I haven't seen. George McKay. And then it's got other people in it, like Paddy Considine's in it, playing the Welsh miner. And he's brilliant, as usual. Imelda Staunton just being...
That's it. It feels like, from the poster, because that's all I've seen of this, I've not read anything about it. It feels like an Imelda Staunton, Bill Nighy sort of thing.
Well, it's a bit like that. It's got, who's the guy who plays the bad guy in Moriarty in Detective, in Sherlock's?
In Detective, that show. Oh, yes, what's his name? He was in Locke as well, wasn't he?
Is it Joshua Hill?
No.
No. Dominic West is in it as well. Jesse Kay's one of the young people. I can't remember what his name is. Anyway.
I'm looking it up.
It's a guy from... you don't need to know people's names, you know what I'm talking
Andrew
about.
Andrew Scott.
There we go.
He's excellent. He's very, very good.
My problem with this film... It's a very entertaining film.
Right.
At the start, it feels a bit patronising. It feels as if it's halfway between... it's almost like a romantic comedy feel... of a serious topic.
Yeah.
And the story is amazing. You've got a lesbian gay society for minors who decide, rather, they try and phone all the... They start collecting money from the miners. They try and phone all the big mining societies in Wales and no one wants to be associated with them. So they just drive to... And they eventually get through to one village and they decide that's going to be their village. They're going to give their money to these people. And they drive there and visit them. And obviously there's a lot of homophobia going on. The miners don't want to be associated with the lesbian and gay
society. They don't want to be the gay mine.
Gay miners, yeah.
Right.
And they want them to be a laughing stock, and there's really bad press. It's still quite homophobia is quite prevalent in the press as well. It's a fascinating story, and the acting is really, really good. I do get annoyed. Bill Nighy's not really doing his Bill Nighy, Richard Curtis thing, which is really annoying. Yeah, that sort of
his aging rock star sort of shtick.
Yeah, and Meryl Streep's a bit like they're all toned down, and the young cast take a bigger role than the older cast. Paddy Considine's brilliant. He's like the representative of the Welsh miners. Who
he's always brilliant.
Yeah,
he's
quite played down. But
have you seen Room for Romeo Brass and Dead Man's Shoes?
Yes,
it's fantastic.
It's exceptional in those.
Absolutely amazing.
But my problem with this film,
right?
I wish it was more gritty. It didn't go for that. Maybe it's because I was watching in the cinema for the and women in their 50s who really annoyed me, who were doing the laughing at it and who clapped at the end of it, which is one of the most annoying things out. Because it feels as if it's trying to be that rom-com feel-good film, and that I find that annoying, and I don't find it funny. I find it quite dated, and it's taking what could have been quite a gritty film, and I think there's issues with homosexuality. They sort of touch on AIDS, but it's done in a sort of quite subtle way. It's not really, and it's almost as if all the Welsh old ladies going to visit the gay people in London. Yeah, let's have a good time here. All the gay cliches of men, dressed in rubber. Everyone's really welcoming and nice, and everyone's not. You don't get that bitchy side of the gay community. You don't get the sort of having gigged stand up in a lot of clubs. You end up gigging in gay bars and things like that. It's quite seedy, quite dark, the world as well.
Well, because you don't really get that. Like all humanity, it's got both sides, isn't it?
And I think, and also with the Welsh miners as well, I think it felt a little bit two dimensional, and it was almost we're making this palatable,
a bit bubblegum.
Yeah, for the masses.
Did you see Brastoff?
And that is exactly the feel of Brastoff,
because it feels like it.
Yes, and that is a perfect a film to compare it to, where it's sort of, aren't we northern? Aren't we in this sort of chef? Was it mining?
It's a mining community.
Marching band.
Yeah, well, it's the colliery band.
Oversimplifies it, and all the characters are a bit two dimensional. Have only got one sort of side to them. They're this distinct character that is easy to understand.
I think Brastoff's a bit better than that, though. I think that might be sort of the reputation of Brastoff, because it was parodied a lot, wasn't it? I mean, people took the piss out of it, but if you rewatch it, Pete Postlethwaite is excellent in it, and in fact, what's his name? The guy who plays the reporter in Drop the Dead Donkey,
Neil.
You know who I mean? No, not that one. The one who plays the roving reporter, who was also in Ballykiss Angel.
Oh yeah, I know that one. He's got blue eyes.
That guy. Yeah, old blue eyes. His character,
Stephen Tomkinson.
Thank you, Stephen Tomkinson. His character has a really dark storyline, and it does go there. I don't know if you remember, but he has a proper mental breakdown because of what's happening. Ends up trying to hang himself dressed as a clown. It's Brastoff for me. It does oversimplify in some ways, and it is it can veer towards the mawkish, but it's got that edge as well. But it sounds like what you're saying, Pride doesn't even have that.
No, I do think that's my problem with it. Nonetheless, it is an enjoyable film. There's some great scenes in it. The acting's really good,
right?
And you can't not like it, no matter how cynical you are. You can't not like it. It just feels as if there's a market. Maybe it was just the environs I was watching in, where it's like, oh, isn't it great? Gay people and miners, and everyone clapping.
Yeah,
and the
yeah.
people are clapping in the cinema are clearly like ex-Thatcherites. they're really sort of.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful.
I was so pleased the gays got along with the miners. Well, we didn't really want anything to. Now, come on, you must come round to Susan's. We've got this lovely new patio, and I'm really sorry. It's only a Prosecco we've got, but that'll have to do. That was what I was like watching.
It's made of the bones of miners and gay people, actually, now I think about it.
I love gays, but I feel so much safer when they're on the screen rather than in my presence.
And I much prefer using electricity than knowing how it's made. I have no interest in mining whatsoever, but I'm pleased someone does.
So different, but I think it's got really good reviews, and it is a feel-good film, but I'm just too cynical. I'd really enjoyed it, though. I'm going to give it an 8.
Oh, really? Okay, great. I mean, what's the budget on it? Is it a big? Is it a decent sort of film, or is this sort of an underdog?
It felt like it was
decent film. That's not what I mean. You know, is it a
your
you
know
is it
for
a
me.
Is it a they've gone all in with this or?
I'm trying to find the budget for it on the computer, but I can't find it anywhere.
Oh, never mind.
What's a budget? What's a website where you can look up budgets for?
Boxofficemojo.com is the... it's Hollywood skewed, so the smaller in British films they don't tend to have, but it's interesting nonetheless. All right, well, eight Merricks. I will...
it's enjoyable, but I think they're... Also, at the same time, annoyed me. I don't really feel that I've, just, as usual, described it very well. I can't find out the budget.
What I like about your reviews, Marek, is it leaves so many questions that it probably makes the films better when you finally see them.
I don't want to give it away.
Yeah, exactly. I know nothing about the characters or what happens.
A load of gays, a load of minors.
I don't want they're to all know.
Two different communities come together and eventually support each other and make friends. Some minor subplots, some sort of nice funny lines, some interesting characters, sad bits, different bits. Quite enjoyable.
Is this
well
a sort of, it's a post-Curtis film, isn't it?
It feels a bit, it's a little bit darker than that.
Is there a romantic subplot?
It's well, no, not really. That's the good thing about it. It's well made and it is, it's hard to do. You've got to say give credit where credit's due. There are a lot of different characters in there, and I suppose some of them are a bit two-dimensional, but it does feel as it works as a big character piece.
I think there's a... This is a sort of a relevant point, but there's something wrong with posters for British films that they clearly haven't paid anybody who's any good at this to make them. Because
the poster for Pride is really annoying, because it just feels annoying. We're just going for that, oh, it's a really pleat... Everyone's having good fun.
It looks like a poster for Horrid Henry. Did you ever see the poster for that on the buses? It makes it look so cheap. They look cheaper than like CBBC shows or something. Like they always make them look dog shit. And it's a bit of a shame, really, because then you see a poster for some actually dog shit American film and you go, that looks amazing.
What poster was you for Pride?
Well, I'm not saying I know what it is. It's just something about the quality of the illustration in the Photoshop.
I would have a coal-stained hand holding a used condom.
Is that how you see...
And then you write and Pride tattooed on the knuckles and the hand.
Wow, so it's like a Football Factory kind of film.
And the coal-stained hand had nail varnish on it. So just
clever. Clever. Because transvesticism is obviously the same thing, isn't
and
it?
And the condom had a hole in it and there's some CP.
Oh, I wouldn't see this film now.
But you'd be intrigued.
I'd be more intrigued than just seeing Imelda Staunton and Bill Nye smiling, some pastel-coloured clothing.
And then it's, okay, well, we're going to the poster now, so can all the established box office stars that appeal to people... the middle class has come to the front and everyone else angle yourself backwards so we can't really tell
can't they don't know who you are.
People don't know who you are and they don't want to know who you are until you've made the film.
Yeah, they never will know who you are.
Okay, the film's doing quite well. Everyone likes the guy. Can we bring the guy forward from the back to the second row, please, so we can see his face a bit clearer?
It is great. Amazing, isn't it? I've mentioned it before, but do you remember that Gina Carano film I spoke about? Who's the MMA fighter?
My memory's only lasted 1 week. Okay. Week everything.
When they released the DVD and the Blu-ray, she's the lead character. It's all about her character, and they redid the poster so it was of Ewan McGregor's face, who is an incidental character.
Really?
Yeah. Such a rude thing to do, but yeah. Terrible.
Hey, life's pretty hard sometimes.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? That's probably not the worst thing that's ever happened.
But when you're feeling down and you think, I'm just so alone in this world.
Thursdays.
What happens to make you feel as if there's other people out there caring about you?
Well, you can basically talk to us, use Film Fandango as a sort of social emotional hub. And
write us an email.
Yeah, write us an email. And if you want to do that, then you can email dearfilmfandango@gmail.com. And some people have done that, haven't they?
Yes, here's one. Mm. His name is Matt Ray.
Matt Ray. And what accent? He's from Whitehaven, I don't know where that is.
What, isn't it up north somewhere?
Is it?
Isn't it sort of near Scotland?
Up north, somewhere near Scotland.
Yeah.
Sort of Cumbria sort of way.
I think it is in Cumbria, you know.
I can't do a Cumbrian accent. I don't know what it sounds like. I'll do him as me. Dear David, Merrick and Buddy. Sorry, not here today. I've recently discovered the trailer for the film The Zero Theorem, directed by Terry Gilliam, and starring Fandango's own favourite bad guy, Christoph Waltz. I'm surprised you haven't reviewed it yet, after showing you your affection for Gilliam's films Brazil and Time Bandits. 8 and 6 mats. I plan on watching it this week and was hoping you could too and give the film Fandango treatment. Anyway, I've left a donation that should cover the costs of renting it from iTunes. Oh, and might cover some of Marek's travelling costs. Keep up the good work and keep watching the films, Matt Ray Whitehaven. Thank you, Matt. I have seen The Zero.
Oh, have you?
Yes, I have.
I haven't seen, but I will see it with your money.
Yeah, please do. Please do. I watched this recently. And I am a huge Terry Gilliam fan. Was, you know, very
I was fascinated when I saw the trailer in the cinema. It looked like it was a mental
childhood. It is, I have to say, and I'm sorry, Terry, if you're listening, his worst film so far.
Really?
It's so boring. It feels like he's getting less and less good at this. Because this one feels like there's a sort of student's philosophy essay in the background of it, like often there is with, you know, this film is about something, it's an allegory for something, it's a metaphor for something, but this one is an allegory. This one is just, he's put this essay in the mouths of some poorly defined characters and nothing happens. There's no story.
It looks beautiful though from the trailer.
Of course, it's a Gilliam film, so it looks mad, but it's nothing we haven't seen before from him. It's very Brazil with fewer ideas and a smaller budget.
You look like 12 Monkeys to me.
There's no story, really. Nothing that's exciting or you know, interesting, and that's the problem. It's really dull. It's a really dull film.
The Zero Theorem. Do you give it zero, David?
I'd probably give it 3, you know.
That's terrible.
It is not a strong film, and, you know, I count among my favourite films of all time, Brazil, Time Bandits, Baron Munchausen. You know, I love 12 Monkeys, I love Tideland. I thought that was really interesting, and that's a more recent one of his. Brothers Grimm is not strong, Imaginarium is a mess, but possibly, you know, forgivably a mess for the circumstances surrounding it.
Mm.
This one is just, it's not entertaining. That's the problem.
And how is old Christoph Waltz in it?
Oh, he's great. Christoph Waltz is really good, isn't he? But it's he is the Sam Lowry equivalent in this film. Sam Lowry is the character that Jonathan Pryce plays in Brazil, and it's just not anything really. I'd be interested in other people's opinions, but I just did not find anything about it engaging.
Oh no!
Sorry.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks for the donation. If you want to donate to help us pay for the hosting of the web podcast, whatever this bloody thing is, and to help us towards Cinematic Geeks, we're not sponsored by anyone like that, as you can tell.
Yeah. Then you can go to filmfandango.co.uk and follow the link from there.
And thank you very much to the people who've done so far. We really appreciate it. I tell you what.
Yeah.
You know Simon Le Bon?
I do know Simon Le Bon, yeah.
Well, the next person who's written it is a name a bit like this. It's Simon Bonner.
It is a bit like that. You read this one.
Simon Bonner. Oh, New York cabbie. Hi, Malik and David. Simon here. That's just Jewish, isn't it? Is that New York?
That's my name. They could be cabbies.
On this week's podcast, you'll mention Robert De Niro's career suicide. With his descent from the heights of Godfather 2 and Raging Bull to the slight bit of Rocky and Bullwinkle and Meet the Parents. He's even made some films that are so bad nobody has even heard of them. E.g. Being Flynn, Freelancers, and The Big Wedding.
That's quite an email, God. I'm going to hurt my voice. I would like to introduce you to an ingenious and admittedly morbid game I've invented. Robert De Niro. The aim of the game is to decide the best death date for once great actors and directors. When would... so morbid.
It's so morbid. I kind of like the game. But...
when would Robert De Niro have to pop his clogs for his reputation as a great actor to be guaranteed? And for the rest of us to be spared his most egregious howlers. My vote is for 1997. That would have got Jackie Brown, but never been exposed to analyze this or Las Vegas. My eyes are still crying from that one. What about Al Pacino? As a fan of Yankee baseball, Merrick might argue to, for 1999 to preserve any given Sunday. I would go as far as 2002 because I'm partial to insomnia, but Pacino should never have lived any longer. Then that, as Simone and Giggly are unforgivably keck. And the less said about those guy adverts, the better. As I'm a fan of About Schmidt, Jack Nicholson should have gone to the pervert retirement home in the sky in 1992 after he made A Few Good Men, because then we would have been spared As Good As It Gets, which is a 140-minute hate crime. Will Smith, 1996, after Independence Day and before any other film he's ever made. What do you think? I'm conflicted about Johnny Depp, who managed to follow up each pirate-based stinker with something more worthwhile. Same for Tom Cruise. If Danielle wants to keep Ghost Protocol, she has to put up with Night and Day. Scorsese, Spielberg, Ridley Scott are also tricky. Obviously, Ridder should be drowned in the mud before he makes a sequel to Blade Runner. But how far back would you go? Cheers, Simon Bonner.
Interesting game.
That's a really good cook.
Okay, he mentions Ridley Scott. I've got Ridley Scott's career in years up here.
So, this is, so you just go to IMDb, put it up, and just think of a death day.
So you say kill on the year that when I get
this
to
is
it.
So what's depressing about this is it's like Logan's Run for actors. Really.
Yeah, it is. Well, it's directors.
My worry is that I probably picked in my career about 8 years ago.
So you should have died.
I shouldn't even. It should be a ghost.
Okay. Well, if I go through the successful films of Ridley Scott,
let me get the. I think Ridley Scott's quite simple because he did Alien and.
It's 2001. He should have died. Before making any films, basically.
Let's just do some ones he's done already. So let's have a look at...
Robert De Niro?
Yeah.
I agree with him on Robert De Niro. Absolutely.
Well, Black Hawk Down was good. For Ridley Scott, sorry, I thought Black Hawk Down was quite good.
Yeah, but then you'd have to have Hannibal, and that is an absolute stinker.
But he did Gladiator as well, which Gladiator, is my sort of film, but if, you've got to
if he died it. After Gladiator, he would be respected, you know, in terms of his career. He'd made Gladiator, Thelma and Louise, Blade Runner and Alien. That is enough.
But the problem, he's making The Martian, which is a book I bought on, which wasn't even published. I just bought it on a whim a few years ago.
Yeah.
On my Kindle for Amazon. It was a brilliant book.
Doesn't mean it'll be a brilliant film.
I mean, I want to wait and see.
He's made Prometheus, you know, Robin Hood.
I like Prometheus.
Really? No, you don't.
After watching that documentary, which I talked about, The Making of Blade Runner, and seeing Ridley Scott fighting against the studios and everything, I've got a newfound respect for him.
Yeah, but he doesn't fight against the studios anymore. He does whatever he damn well chooses and makes duff movies.
As for Al Pacino...
Yeah.
I don't think Insomnia is good enough to save him.
So what year are you going with?
I don't even think Donnie Brasco. The last film I've really liked is Heat.
Okay.
Cause he plays pretty much the same characters. I love Glengarry Glen Ross, 1992.
Yeah.
Colito's Way is quite... I'm not a fan of... He did quite a good run. Frankie and Johnny was great.
It's TV, but Angels in America he's brilliant in.
Doesn't count.
Okay.
Heat, 1995.
I would go after Any Given Sunday because I love his speech and he's brilliant in Any Given Sunday. I would go 99.
I'm a big fan of American sports, but that's not big enough to
that's football.
Save him.
That's all it is.
Robert De Niro.
Yeah.
Play along at home. So get up IMDb, go through. You've got all the list of things there. It's really fun, isn't it?
It's a fun game. So Robert De Niro.
He churns about 3 films a year. It's incredible just how his IMDb thing, you have to scroll down.
so far.
About 40 or 50 films since he did anything good.
Well, not anything good, but something he's good in. That's the difference, isn't it? I agree. Sleepers. I think it's 97. I think it's got to be 97. Like, Ronin has got good car chases, but it's not a fantastic film.
I enjoyed Ronin, but I do like Jackie Brown, and I think that's the last one.
Yeah.
And also, if you do that, you get... I quite like Sleepers, and you get Heat as well. And Casino is 95. 97. So, actually...
Oh, but Frankenstein's already been made.
Robert De Niro outlives Al Pacino.
Good to know. Okay, here's a tricky one.
Yeah.
Nicolas Cage.
I want to know what happens to Nicolas Cage.
I just want to let him keep him running.
Yeah, but I think with Nicolas Cage, who's a popular figure in our podcast,
yeah,
it's still interesting what he's going
to
do. Because
he's made so many stinkers, but you've got to let him do Kick-Ass, haven't you? Which is 2010.
What was that film that I watched? I reviewed the other Joe. That was quite interesting. It's him going back to old form. At least he's still... Al Pacino and... Robert De Niro just doing caricatures of himself. Nicolas Cage, no one knows. Not even he knows what he's doing.
No, you're absolutely right. Okay, who else has sort of gone down the poop hole?
I mean, what's hard is for female actors. It's just quite depressing. There aren't many good parts for people in their 50s. I mean, if Hollywood had it that way, everyone would.
But as a result, do they not go off the boil because they don't have overexposure?
It's a shame you don't see. It just shows you how sexist Hollywood is. You have all these male actors doing it, and female, like Michelle Pfeiffer, who's brilliant.
Well, they tend to. British actresses seem to get more parts when they're older because they haven't had work done, so they actually look their age.
So, Jack Nicholson, who hasn't done them, I liked As Good As It Gets. I did quite like The Pledge.
I didn't see The Pledge.
It's just a fascinating film. And I think that Jack Nicholson has still got a sparkle in his eyes, which maybe Pacino and Robert De Niro have lost. Well, let us know what you think, audience.
Yeah, or let each other know. This feels like one of those conversations for Facebook, doesn't it? Rather than
people say
that email.
We talk about Facebook and stuff. We don't ever read out stuff on Facebook.
We don't read it out, but it's more for talking to each other. But if you'd like to join in this debate, then go to facebook.com/filmfandango and talk to each other there. Or you can start a Twitter hashtag if you want. We're at filmfandango or at Mr. David Reed or at Marek Larwood.
Should we go on to the... We've got some more letters, but we'll read them out next time.
Okay, we'll read them out next week. Yes, well, I've seen a film that caught my eye. I didn't know anything about it other than people were talking about it a bit. And so I watched it. It's a great story, isn't it? It's called The Machine. Now, is a 2013 sci-fi film that is... a low budget movie, like super low budget. Like, it's a sci-fi film for under £1 million, which is.
And that barely covers the cost of tinfoil.
No, I know, to wrap your protagonist in.
Yeah.
And, the vocal lesson so he can go beep. But this is the debut of Caradog W. James, which is an incredible name.
First name, Caradog.
Caradog, C-A-R-A-D-O-G.
What would you call him then, for short? Dog?
No, I'd call him Caradog, wouldn't you?
I don't know.
Yeah, but Caradog. But this is a tiny budget sci-fi film starring Toby Stevens, who you may know. He's been in lots
Bond
of stuff.
Films and stuff.
Sadly, he is the villain in the worst Bond film ever, but Die Another Day.
He's a red-headed man, isn't he?
Yes, you're sort of angrier Damian Lewis.
Yeah, Damian Lewis must have stolen a lot of his parts, I reckon.
They probably see each other in waiting rooms quite a bit, going, oh, Damian.
And Damian's career has gone up while Toby Stevens has gone down.
Yeah. But it also stars a relative newcomer called Katie Lotz, who plays both a scientist in this, whose brain is the model for an android. And she plays the android as well.
What happens then?
Okay, this is about a secret government program.
Not another one.
That is involved in making robotic prostheses for soldiers who've been injured in combat, but actually their plan is to then combine all of these prostheses to make an android so they don't need soldiers at all.
Oscar Pistorius.
You know, he is one step towards murder bots.
Oh, okay.
Isn't he? Allegedly.
So you're saying...
He's culpable for being one step towards murder bots.
His legs made him kill people.
No, I'm trying to say... Allegedly. That if we were going to make a robot that was going to kill people, we'd use his legs, wouldn't we?
And not hit in his mind. Maybe.
Maybe. We'd use his mind to be culpable of the deaths.
Anyway, this is not about... Is this about Oscar Pistorius?
No. But it's basically underground facility... where they are developing tech to help soldiers specifically who've had brain damage as well as limbs blown off and stuff. And this scientist is brought in because of her work on artificial intelligence, on developing computerized brains, because that's the most complex piece of the puzzle and the last bit they need. So far, so generic. What stands out about this for such a low-budget film is, one, the script is actually excellent, mm-hmm. and the direction is fantastic as well. It's done brilliantly for all of that, and the central performances are really good. This girl, Katie Lotz, who's a dancer, actually, the difference in her performances between playing this sort of happy-go-lucky scientist... who's really out of a depth amongst these sinister people, and the android itself is brilliant, absolutely brilliant. It would be very easy to go, I'm going to be a robot, and people go, you're just pretending to be a robot.
Not what if I did this voice.
Where's Merrick gone? but she is really, really good in this central role, and she'll probably do a lot more. No, she's Australian, I think.
I am a robot.
That's it, yeah. She's now in the TV series Arrow already, I think, as some superhero or other.
What is Arrow about?
Arrow is about a man with a bow and arrow. What?
That's racist.
Yeah, it is. Whatever you were going to say, it definitely is. I know you well enough to know it was probably definitely racist.
You can say that, can't you? You can call the film Arrow and make it about a Japanese guy who's just really pleased to see everyone.
I don't think that's cool. I don't think that is cool.
Never mind.
This podcast is more and more frequently me being really disappointed with you.
You can edit that out.
No, I won't. Okay. Like I did last week.
Oh, did I say something bad last week?
Yeah. So it's an interesting watch, and I was really surprised by actually how engaging it was. I've got a criticism, it goes from being its own thing and really quite interesting to it climaxes to being a well-made thing you've seen before.
Okay.
If you know what I mean. So it's actually been quite inventive in the sort of first half, and then it slowly turns into... 1,000 films you've seen
before.
When
was this released in?
2013.
And was it just disappeared?
I presume it didn't get a general release because of the tiny budget, but it's if you're a fan of sci-fi, it's worth a look. It's not going to, you know, be a classic, but it might get a bit of a cult following because it is fun.
The Machine.
You may have seen it actually on streaming services and stuff. It's got a very white poster.
And Katie Lotz has spelt her name C-A-I-T-Y.
Like it's short for Caitlin.
Or maybe it is. Otherwise you're a knob.
But it surprised me, this film. And the baddie is excellent in it. He doesn't go over the top. He's playing the sort of the government man who doesn't care if the robot has feelings or has a soul or whatever. It's a government property and he will do the pragmatic thing. It's a part we've seen 1,000 times. But he plays it utterly believably where you're like, well, no, he's being reasonable. And you know, so there is ambiguity in it. And it's actually played, I looked him up, He is Wedge Antilles in all of the Star Wars, original Star Wars films. The only other X-Wing pilot to make it out of the Death Star run.
Oh, really? What's his name in real life?
Dennis Lawson, is it?
Yes, Dennis. Oh, he's the one who played loads of... He was in loads of TV series.
Yes, yes, he's done a lot of TV since. He's Inside Number 9 was the most recent thing I saw him in, which was the Reese Shearsmith, Steve Pemberton series, where he played the man in the expensive studio house.
He was in Kit Current, you don't remember that, do you?
No, what's that?
It was a TV series. It was in 1986, I was 10 years old, and I remember him being really funny, and he was really young. I can't even remember what it's about. Kit Current, if you remember that.
Okay. Well, you know, he's excellent. I think he should do more stuff. I thought he was absolutely brilliant. But it showed a real restraint with its CGI. Because obviously with a small budget, sets cost a fortune. Big sets especially, complicated ones. And sci-fi, my God, to attempt sci-fi on a small budget is brave. Mm. You know, I've seen other small sci-fis, things like Storage 24, Noel Clarke's film, which is just... dog shit. But it's because there's no invention in it. It's just, here's me doing a film I've seen before. Whereas this one was actually, it had some authorship to it, and a real subtlety of touch with the CG, because you don't notice it most of the time, but they've clearly used it. They must have done. It's just, you know what it is? It's a watch this space for that writer-director, because good stuff may come if they're given a bigger budget.
Cool. So there we go. Pride...
And the machine. Sounds like something.
Sounds like Florence the Machine or Rage Against the Machine.
Yeah, or something else.
Before we go, I said, do you ever get that thing where you remember a really old film you've completely forgotten about?
Yeah.
Jim, I watched this cartoon and I managed to find it by some fluke. I got recommended something on YouTube that was linked to something else.
Right.
It was called Rock and Roll. Do you remember that?
No. What is it?
It was an animation, and they got it was Canadian. It doesn't really work because of the problems in the making of it. About this singer in an apocalyptic world where everyone's sort of dogs and cats, but this rock band who are trying to sort of get going.
Sounds incredibly 80s.
It is really 80s, and there's an evil villain called Mock who wants to summon all these demons by using the lead singer's voice.
Is it a feature film?
It's a cartoon animation, yeah, a feature film.
I've never heard of it.
Called Rock and Roll. It doesn't really work, but some of its work amazingly. Some of the drawing animation's amazing. And it had people like Blondie doing the music and lots of famous musicians.
Wow.
I wonder if anyone's heard of it.
That 80s thing of rock and roll can save the universe.
Yeah.
That very Bill and Ted, isn't it?
And they're making that again, aren't they, apparently?
Well, there's talk of... is it Alex...
Winters.
Winters. I was going to say Summers. Yeah. Alex Winters spoke recently about Bill and Ted 3 that they've been talking about for ages. But he and Keanu are very good friends still.
He must be running out of money, isn't he, Alex Winters?
No, he's been working in production happily for years. He's a director and producer.
Much nicer job.
I would have thought so. But of course, George Carlin is no longer with us, so Rufus would have to be... He was great in it, but...
Well, let's see if I can get that part.
But, you'd be good, Rufus, I think.
Thanks. Well, that's it, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. That's it. We'll be back next week with yet more films. So do get in touch if you'd like us to read out your email. That address again, dearfilmfandango@gmail.com. We'll be back. Keep watching the films. Bye.